Welcome into the show, everybody. It's Cairo Nights with Mace and Mike. Frank, I'm mad at you.
What did I do now?
You told me it's going to be muggy tomorrow. Now, I'm an upbeat guy. I'm a positive guy.
Yeah.
I don't want to start the show by complaining. But if there's one thing, and I get it. Look, we're all wimps
about... You know this is talk radio, right?
Yeah, well, that's true. Maybe I should take a lesson. I should you know what? I'm going to rail against humidity.
Yeah,
I'm going to stand up and scream.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
You don't like sticky weather.
I can take a dry heat.
Yeah.
I can take a cold.
Yeah.
No problem. But when it's hot and damp, when it's muggy out, my body responds by turning into just a walking puddle.
Now, you need to explain to people that this is, you come by this honestly because you come from country where this kind of weather is
oh, yeah.
du jour.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah. The East Coast gets, I mean, the summers are insane.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of time in the South. My dad's from North Carolina. I spent a lot of time in the South. That's unheard of. I was a landscaper in Tampa, Florida for a year.
Especially cool experience.
I got a woman, I was walking around a woman's yard as part of my job. At like 8 in the morning, something like that, spreading some fertilizer. And she looks at me, and I'm just sopping wet because it's 100% humidity and 85 degrees at 8 in the morning in Tampa. And she goes, oh, were my sprinklers on? Did you get caught in my sprinklers? I'm like, lady, it's Tampa. I'm sweating. How dare you? She's offended. Is that good enough for yelling? Am I railing?
That's
am
good.
I raging
That's,
against I just, the machine?
You're getting warmed up.
You feel better?
A little bit. A little bit. 98973 is the State Roofing text line if you guys want to join in. Rail against something. You got something that's in your craw, something grinding your gears, shoot us a text. 98973. I introduced Frank Shires, and then I got off on just yelling at everything. Guys,
rails.
DB is here. Of course, David Burbank is on those ones and twos, keeping us all together. The glue, if you will, that holds this menagerie.
Wait a minute. Isn't today Wednesday?
Frank... It's not just Wednesday. It's Soft Rock Wednesday. Happy Soft Rock Wednesday, everybody. We got the smoothest of jams coming up all night long until 10 o'clock. But, you know, we're not paid to just
blather
and dilly-dally, although some would argue otherwise. There is some actual news to cover, so let's get to it.
Here's the top three things we need to discuss. Number one.
Was that the move on with it, Bell, DB? I like that.
You betcha.
It's a nice addition. Boeing announced today that they will be notifying nearly 7,000 U.S. employees this week that they have been laid off. This adds to the nearly 5,500 employees that the company offered to buy out during this coronavirus pandemic. Here is Cairo Radio's Chris Sullivan. We call him Sully with more.
Boeing has finished its voluntary layoff program, and there weren't enough takers to prevent this round of involuntary layoffs. More than 6,700 U.S. employees will be notified this week. In a statement, Boeing CEO David Calhoun wrote, "I wish there were some other way. For those of you who were notified, I want to offer my personal gratitude for the contributions you have made to Boeing, and I wish you and your families the very best." Impacted workers will receive severance pay, COBRA health care coverage, and career transition services. More layoffs will come as more than 10,000 Washington workers will lose their jobs overall.
According to CEO David Calhoun, Boeing is planning to cut up to 16,000 jobs total throughout the United States. The company did their best to look after American jobs, cutting up to 400 at its Winnipeg fabrication plant in Canada last week, and over 230 jobs from a Boeing manufacturing plant in Melbourne, Australia, earlier in the month. Finance experts and economists throughout Washington state believe that the shrinking of Boeing's workforce will be a more permanent move, with the aerospace business taking a massive hit during the last several months. Meanwhile, the company has decided that now is the perfect time to restart the Renton Central production lines. They're the ones that are responsible for assembling the 737 MAX jet. Our own Cairo Radio's Aaron Granillo, we call him AG, has more details on those grounded planes.
While the planes remain grounded, Boeing says it is starting back up the MAX production line in Renton. The company plans to begin building the planes at a low rate and then gradually ramp up production this year. Boeing stopped building the MAX in January as the jet's worldwide grounding dragged on longer than expected. The company still hopes to win FAA approval sometime this summer. The MAX has not flown since March of last year after two deadly crashes.
During the production halt, Boeing said it has implemented more than a dozen initiatives to improve the way the 737 MAX is built. In a message to employees this morning, Boeing commercial airplane CEO Stan Deal outlined some changes to how the MAX will be built going forward, including a new standard set of toolkits and work processes for each work position in the factory, new control centers beside the assembly line on the factory floor, that's where engineers can provide real-time support to mechanics, and a reconfigured factory layout to eliminate unnecessary equipment and provide teams a clear line of sight to the airplane. Now, last month, Boeing was forced to remove 200 orders of the MAX from its backlog, with most of the orders being canceled and the rest because the commitment was considered no longer solid enough to be counted. However, while orders may be dropping, American Airlines has at least confirmed that they will need some number of MAX jets to replace their current planes once the airline business picks back up again.
Yeah, and this story is going to be playing out for a while now. We're a little concerned that this is not the end of the layoffs, but the beginning. The whole airline industry is in free fall. Several airlines are nearing bankruptcy, which means fewer orders for Boeing. The 787 line, which was supposed to really save Boeing, got hit hardest by the pandemic because its production, at least as far as Everett goes, is really dropped off from what its original plan was. And later on in the show, we'll be talking with Andrew McIntosh of the Puget Sound Business Journal, going into great detail. He's the guy who covers this thing and knows more about it than just about anybody. We'll be talking with him, I think, at 8 o'clock.
At 8 o'clock.
At 8 o'clock.
Yes,
so
sir. Stay
tuned.
Number two.
Live music and entertainment fans have been starving for new and fresh performances during the coronavirus pandemic. Well, in 2 weeks, on June 10th, the city of Seattle has a surprise for anyone craving a show. A virtual concert will be taking place, including 13 of the state's most popular and influential music figures. King 5 had the story this morning.
The concert is part of a new coalition called All in Washington. It's made up of public officials, private companies, community organizations, individuals, and nonprofits. The goal, provide immediate support for workers and families in Washington State. Amazon is the presenting sponsor of the concert, paying for the production. All in Washington hopes to raise $65 million, and an advisory board will distribute the money to 42 funds and causes all across the state.
The lineup for the concert will include Pearl Jam, Dave Matthews, Brandi Carlile, Macklemore, Ciara, Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll, Ben Gibbard, Sir Mix-a-Lot, Alan Stone, Mary Lambert, The Black Tones, and Joel McHale. Already, All in Washington has raised $20 million coming from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and Microsoft Corporation, Paul G. Allen Family Foundation, The Ballmer Group, Howard and Sherry Schultz, Nick and Leslie Hanauer, Jim and Jan Senegal, and the Perigee Fund. Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos has also pledged to match individual donations under $1 million to the group's causes to up to $25 million in total. The concert will take place over live stream on June 7th on King 5 TV and on Kong. When live concert venues return to Seattle, we're wondering now, what will they look like? The Seattle Times did a fairly extensive piece on that, and the piece is, like anything right now, highly speculative on what people plan on doing. But here's what some things look like. There's a few venues that are going to be better off than others. In fact, the ones that, if you had to group them, largely the ones where people stay seated and you can limit the number of seats, when you're talking town hall or an on-the-boards sort of place, they have a pathway forward because they can keep distance from the stage and they can keep distance from people from each other, just selling fewer tickets, which actually puts them both under some pressure. But they also both can set up some form of streaming, so people at home can also donate and watch these performances there. The music venues, on the other hand, have a little tougher path.
Yeah. Live streaming is the way to go, I think. I know it doesn't quite do it if you want to get up in that pit and you want to get sweaty and you want to be shoulder to shoulder with people, but really, who's going to be doing that, knowing what we know and pre-vaccine and all that? I'm sure there are folks out there who are itching to do it, but I just think from a liability standpoint alone, that's not necessarily the most responsible move to make. So I'm looking forward to more streaming things like that, like this show you were talking about, this All in Seattle show. I mean, I love this idea, and we're gonna talk a little bit about this kind of thing in the next story. But I do love that you've got arts being prioritized, right? Especially in a time where people are strapped, where you know, lots of people are unemployed, lots of businesses aren't making their revenues, et cetera, et cetera. You've got an understanding from the top levels of government or the people who are in some powerful decision making positions that go, you know what, music is important. Arts are important. It affects us in a powerful way. How many powerful moments or memorable moments of your life do you have attached to some kind of art, whether it's a song, music, something like that, a movie that you saw? It's a powerful, powerful thing. And I'm so happy that it hasn't been forgotten or neglected in a time like this when, frankly, we really need it the most.
Yeah, and also when a lot of the smaller music venues, the ones where you actually have some of your best time, the best shows, when those are particularly under threat, mm-hmm. when they aren't backed by a big company, they're small, locally owned places, and hopefully a lot of this is going to be able to help them backfill. Because remember, those places, it's not like they were serving food. It's not like they can do, sidewalk service of a song. They have to have these venues open, and so hopefully all of this can start helping and keep that end of Seattle a little bit more stable than it has been, because most of what drew a lot of people to Seattle, believe it or not, wasn't always just, you know, Amazon or Microsoft. What drew them to Seattle was how strong the music and theater arts community is.
Yep.
It's always been one of the best cities in America for that. For a period of time, had more per capita repertory theater members than any place in America.
Is that true?
I mean, this has always been a very, very strong arts town, and it's nice to see that. Not, I understand the priorities are out there. I understand people getting sick, and we need to worry about frontline providers and whatnot. All of that. There's so many things to worry about, but it's nice to see the arts not get forgotten.
I like how Seattle has just straight up claimed Dave Matthews at this point. Like, he's not from here. He was born in South Africa, but he's from Virginia.
But
like,
he's been living lived for a long time in Wallingford. I don't know if he still does. He also is a notorious, well, he was a notorious gym equipment hog. Yes, because I used to, for some weird reason, when I used to work out down at a place called Sound Mind and Body, it's now Google, but it was right on the
the water there.
Yeah. And it was a great gym, great basketball gym, one of the prettiest I've ever seen. He used to work out there roughly around the same time. And he'd have, like, towels draped over, like, his whole circuit. And he would hog the machine. And I got to say, he is a really spectacularly good guy from everyone I've talked to. But his gym etiquette, I think, needs a little work.
He was just practicing social distancing.
Maybe so.
Before he was ahead
well
of the curve.
Before, yeah, well
he was
ahead
of the curve. Yeah. See? DB gets it. He knows what I'm talking about.
Number three.
All right, let's keep talking about the arts a little bit here. Vulcan Inc., that's one of the companies founded by the late Paul Allen. They announced today that they will be closing their arts and entertainment division, due in large part to the pandemic. Vulcan runs a plethora of arts and entertainment institutions here in Seattle, including the beloved Cinerama Theater, which has been closed due to renovations. Now, that started before the pandemic began, but according to a press statement from Vulcan, Cinerama will remain closed, quote, for the foreseeable future. Vulcan is also in charge of Seattle's Art Fair, the Living Computers Museum, and the Flying Heritage and Combat Armor Museum. The Seattle Art Fair, which would have taken place later this year, was canceled due to, obviously, concerns surrounding the coronavirus. But now the future of the Art Fair lays open as well. This statement from Vulcan claimed, quote, they will take some time to see how the situation and art world calendar evolve before deciding any future plans, end quote. The company declined to say how many employees would be affected by the closures. I have to tell you, Mike, I am bummed to hear that we may be losing the Cinerama.
Yeah, me too. In fact, I kept thinking, like, who in town? The funny thing is, everyone in town, when there was something, potentially something that also had sort of a nerdy element, when we needed it saved, everyone's just, you know what to do, Paul Allen.
Yeah,
and
call Paul.
I mean, call Paul. I mean, literally was.
Better call Paul.
That was what you always did in Seattle, probably to a real maddening degree if you are on the receiving end of that. But you also realize now, and what you're seeing, the way Vulcan is sort of like spinning off things that it doesn't really want anymore, how much of that company was specifically his passions and his interests, and they aren't shared by other people at the company, particularly, I guess, his sister who runs the show. And that's fine. She doesn't need to have the same interests. But it really is unfortunate that some of these things that we just came to expect as part of the Seattle landscape were really being propped up by one man's interest.
And so
the shame of the Cinerama, which I like the same way everyone else is, I hope that it is the funny thing is, like, some of the staff were hinting, like, this is a permanent move. This is not a temp. When they started doing the
initially,
that could have just been people speculating. We didn't know a pandemic was coming.
Sure,
but nonetheless, I mean, it proves prophetic at this particular case. And I do hope, again, I don't know who it is now. Who's the rich person who wants to prop up Cinerama? Or hopefully, maybe it's even a good enough business that it can just be done. Someone can buy it, and someone can run it maybe as a nonprofit theater, but I agree with you. I'd hate to lose that.
That's exactly where I wanted to go with this, because in the first story we talked about that concert that's going to be happening, and you heard all the foundations, all the people that are involved. It's this really big group of people who are pooling resources and getting this thing done. But this is the problem. This is the danger of when you lean on one billionaire, right? When you count on one particular person's interests. We wouldn't have half the things we have as far as arts, entertainment, and like nerdy stuff. I mean, the whole, it's not the EMP now.
No, MoPop.
MoPop, that's right. Like, MoPop started, that was a passion project. The Sci-Fi Museum, like, that was all Paul Allen. And then you see what happens when you just have one load-bearing pillar, and that pillar gets removed. You're up to the whims of whoever takes the reins, and that's nothing that any of us have control over.
And hopefully, like the EMP, like KEXP, these can be spun off into self-supporting groups.
Yeah.
I mean, really, at the end, I think that was always his desire as well. And so, hopefully, these things are not just lost because the person was lost, but they actually get, somehow they find an even more stable, independent existence away from the Vulcan Group.
425, what we need most is arts, not food, not shelter, not jobs. Only a gainfully employed commie would say this. Listen, 425.
Wait. We said it's very important, not the other things notwithstanding.
Right.
I mean, we're not saying that in any way, but if you want to listen to the whole thing that we said it's also important. We did not say that, it is in front of, you know, worrying about health care or frontline health providers.
Of course.
Or any number of other things.
Right. Got to listen to everything, folks. Guys, what a show we have. Andrew McIntosh from the Puget Sound Business Journal. He's going to break down this Boeing news that you heard at the top of the show. That's coming up at 8 o'clock. At 8:30, former mayor of Seattle Greg Nichols is going to talk about this new committee he's on that's going to figure out what in the world to do with the West Seattle Bridge. If that's something you're interested in, stick around for 8:30. But coming up next, Rachel Bell has a delightful feature about a local business doing what they got to do. It's coming up next. Kyra Nights. Songs about you, Rachel Bell.
Old marble mouth Michael McDonald.
Right?
He was with the Doobie Brothers for a while, but he also had a solo career, right?
Doobie Brothers.
Oh, yeah. We're hanging out with Rachel Bell.
Hi.
At 7:30 on a Soft Rock Wednesday.
My favorite day of the week.
Yeah, baby girl.
Did you say baby girl?
Yeah, I was trying to do like Michael McDonald.
But also like a boys to men version of Michael McDonald.
Baby girl, Rachel Bell. What do you got for us today, Rach?
Well, we're going to talk about I couldn't even roll my R. That's pathetic. Restaurants.
Frank and Sue Ginzali own Frankie's B-Town Bistro, an Italian restaurant in Burien.
We grew up here. We see a lot of our high school friends. Sue and I have been dating since the eighth grade.
Wow. So, Frank says his family started selling produce at the Pike Place Market in 1928, and he and his wife opened Frank's Quality Produce there in 1979. What inspired you to open a restaurant after so many years with the produce stand?
God only knows. Urging from all our friends out here. Between the two of us, we know pretty much everybody and everything in Burien. We're here every night. We love it.
Thanks to KeyBank suspending their rent, Frankie's B-Town Bistro has been eking by doing takeout with only a couple employees.
And what percentage of money are you making now compared to, you know, when you were at full-blown capacity? Like, are you making, like, 25% of what you were making before? Or, like, what's your number?
We never made any money. This is a work of love or a love of work, one or the other. No, we're only doing 20% of what we were doing before. It's just takeout.
Frank and Sue did not open the restaurant to do takeout. They miss seeing their community fill up the dining room with their graduation and birthday parties, enjoying plates piled high with spaghetti and meatballs made with his family's recipes.
We're more interested in having our friends and families and stuff come back and enjoy a meal with us.
So looking ahead to an eventual reopening, they asked their loyal customers what changes they would like to see.
We have about 3,500 people on our email list, and I launched a survey asking our customers what would make them most comfortable dining in with us again.
Michelle Smith is the restaurant's wine director.
A, people can't wait. And B, that they just want social distancing and cleanliness. And so they constructed these partitions in the restaurant around every table and reducing the capacity by 50%. And no one had to tell them to do it. They just did it. So I'm really proud of these guys.
Frank built wood partitions, making every table into a private booth. And
we put plexiglass up around our pizza window, plexiglass partitions in the entryway. Lots of plexiglass partitions outside so that people will not come in contact with each other unless they get up and climb over the wall and sneeze on somebody. But it's what our customers want. I think they'll be comfortable with it. We'll be sanitizing tables and chairs after people leave.
Staff will be wearing masks and gloves, and menus and condiments will be disposable.
Honestly, I feel real good about it. I like the way it turned out. We kind of did it on a temporary basis. Everything can be removed if it has to be, but it's very comfortable. I'm kind of excited to see how people receive it.
Being a fixture in the Pike Place Market since the 1920s, his family's businesses have survived wars and earthquakes, the Great Depression, and recessions. Frank and Sue are all about the long game.
We've been married for 52 years, and our businesses are generations old, and that's the way we are.
No word yet on when restaurants will reopen, but when they do, the Ginzali family will be ready.
So I featured them because I hadn't heard of any other restaurant yet who had started to build things like this, who had actually gone in, done the partitions, kind of took a look at how the restaurant would look when they were allowed to open again.
I love this story.
I know.
I mean, I say that after so many stories, but they are adorable. And they have like, it seemed like they had a family Zoom chat when you were interviewing. There's a bunch of people there.
I think it was the first time they used Zoom, because otherwise I'd say this guy needs to do a YouTube channel and, you know, explain to people what he did and teach them how to do it, because he made, you know, these kind of removable booths. But I don't know, that might be a little too technological for them.
I mean, the warm thing about this story is not even, it's something that I guess information he gave you, but not anything he said. And that's the forgiving the rent, because I mean, that's actually what's giving him the capacity.
Right.
To do this, if without that, that's one. The other story that we've been doing a lot of is the places that are closing, and that's wonderful that someone gave them, because this is what happens if you can just get someone a chance, let them coast for a while, they can do this sort of thing and build it back up. And the other thing that he had that I really liked, at least you could hear it in his voice, is enthusiasm. I mean, like if you don't have that right now, if you can't gin that up, you are not going to get through this because it is brutal.
This is really great because it sort of piggybacking on what Mike just said, it really does let you know, like, these guys have been there. They've seen it. You know, they've gone through stuff before, hardships, and this is their attitude about it. So someone like me, who's never really had to deal with anything like this before, or folks out there listening, you hear from folks who have seen there and who are in the midst of all this mess, and still their attitude is positive. We can do this. And it really does help inspire me. It's that kind of attitude is contagious.
No, you're right. I think that personality and, you know, your attitude is Darwinian, because there's like certain kind of personalities that can just weather these things better than others. I mean, of course, there's plenty of people who own businesses who just have bad attitudes, and it's easier said than done. I mean, whatever reason why they are like this is just so great for them, because even if things don't work out, fine.
Yeah.
Because in their hearts and in their minds, they're happy.
Yeah, and also, it's nice particularly in sort of the talk radio environment, to get somebody who is actually looking at it and deciding, all right, time to make some lemonade, because we do over-index on the people who are angry at the state and angry at the city and angry at the situation. And those people have a valid point, absolutely, but those are not the only points out there. And it's nice to see somebody who said, all right, you know, time to roll up the sleeves, roll out the plexiglass, and get busy.
Yeah, I think it's smart that they got ahead of the game instead of waiting for the governor to say this is the rules. Because when I went to the dentist a couple weeks ago, the governor didn't give all of the guidance until the day before they opened. Mm. So if you just wait till the last minute, you'll never be able to open as soon as you possibly could. So I think this is good advice for other places. You know, I know that a restaurant near my house, they closed down and did some construction, not for this, but just a lot of places are taking care of things that they haven't been able to take care of for years.
Yeah.
And I think that this is a good idea to start early. Just be ready. If you want to open as soon as you can, this is the only way to do it.
Have you been fixing stuff, Mike, over at the bar?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're actually starting to figure out. We're a really have a really unfortunate configuration for the initial restrictions, given that we're a lot of bar space and booths. Booths are problematic because they're fixed. You can't really move them around. And so that means you're skipping every one, every other one. Tables, I mean, we are mostly in the main room of our bar. We are mostly 36 seats at the bar, you know, less than that at the tables and booths.
Well, I was thinking about you and wondering how you were going to do it, because Frank said that they have to close their whole bar down. They're only going to do tables because you can't have people lined up at the bar. Like, they'll just serve drinks to the table. So I was thinking, yikes, how are bars with bars going to open?
Well, and particularly ones like ours, and there's a few other in town that mostly it's bar seats. That's literally 60% of what you do. So that cutting it in half and then isolating it to tables really puts you at about 20% capacity. And that's when it doesn't pencil out financially. But as the guy who from some random bar said, who we had on air, I think last week or the week before, who was dynamite, he said, like, even if you're losing a little bit of money, he felt, and I thought this was a really interesting point, it's been rattling around in my head since he said it, that he thinks there's a benefit to having your neighbors see you try. And I really liked that as an idea, because I think that's important. That's like what this guy you just interviewed, Rachel. I like the people who are saying that stuff, because it gets me like, of course, right? That's a totally appropriate attitude to take as well.
Right.
It's contagious.
Absolutely.
Show is.
So head on down to Burien and go get takeout at Frankie's B Street Bistro.
Love it.
That's my ad.
Thanks, Rachel Bell.
You're welcome.
We'll be back. More Cairo Nights right after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights, everybody. Happy Soft Rock Wednesday to you. You know, a lot of people are curious about what's happening with sports. And just a heads up, a little programming note, if you will. At 9 o'clock, we're going to talk to Stacy Joe about baseball, about Major League Baseball. There are negotiations going on right now between the players and the owners, and really trying to figure out how in the world we can get baseball up and running again. And there's a lot to it. The economics of baseball are quite complicated. So we're going to spend a little time with Stacy at 9. But now I wanted to talk about the NBA. The NBA was one of the first big sports leagues to call off their season because of coronavirus. I remember
technically not called off.
Oh, postponed?
Suspended.
Suspended.
Yeah, so that's what this is all about.
Yes.
Because they didn't actually want to call off, although people kept expecting they're going to call it off.
So people are getting creative. I mean, folks want, not only fans and players want sports going running again, up and running again, but so do the owners and the network executives at stations like ESPN. They're something like $2.6 billion they make a year because they broadcast NBA games. So they're thirsty for basketball to come back again. And ESPN is owned by the Disney Corporation. And Disney has floated this idea that what if we get the NBA, I assume the entirety of the NBA, down to the ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex, that's near Orlando in Florida, and we kind of set up a big old bubble, and we have everyone there. We play all the games there. No fans, obviously, but we have some version of a basketball season.
Yeah, it's a huge campus down there. It's 256 acres, I think. Mm. 24,000 hotel rooms, all empty.
Yeah,
and
right.
So it's an opportunity, and they feel like they can bring everyone, the whole league down there, play a bunch of games without fans. That'd be multiple games in a day.
Mm-hmm.
Clean and disinfect between, keep the players as isolated as they can, other than when they're on the court and in very, very close proximity,
right,
and trading a lot of sweat. They seem to, and testing every day, that sort of thing, like they can create sort of a model for the league. And my guess is that if they can do this, isolate everyone from the trainers to the coaches to the other people who work in the team along with the players over the course of a few games, my guess is that there's probably going to have to be a decision about whether or not we look at the season standings as they were when the season shut down and decide and pick the top teams, those are the playoff teams, and roll into some playoffs immediately, or play out another month of the season. They're already really at the place where we would be in the playoffs right now. I guess that's probably an option.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see if they can do it, because I think the other leagues will be watching very, very closely.
Yeah.
On if they can pull this off.
Yeah, I don't know what you do about families, you know?
You don't have them there.
You're going to be without them for however long.
You are not going to have your family with you.
They want to go.
But, I mean, these players are used to traveling and being on the road. They're not used to necessarily being on the road for an entire month. Although, when the playoffs hit, you can be. You can go from city to city and never actually make that return trip home. And so, conceivably, this is not going to be, and they're used to living out of hotel rooms, and they are, if anything can travel efficiently, it's a professional sports team. They're very, very good at getting all of their stuff up and moved and into a hotel. They understand that environment pretty well, about getting down to the gym. It's an interesting idea. If they can pull it off safely, more power to them.
Right.
It's going to be weird to listen to broadcast games. If you've never attended any basketball practice, I mean, but they all sound kind of the same with no fans there. It's a lot of squeaking.
Squeak, squeak, squeak.
And a lot of yelling. Uh-huh. And it's going to be interesting if they broadcast that and don't censor out what we will be hearing.
Oh, I can't wait.
Which is as blue as it gets in any sports league.
Yeah.
But you can't hear it over the crowd noise. So it's going to get pretty interesting what the NBA and ESPN are going to decide to do about that end of things.
I am really warming up to the idea of no fans. And according to data, so is everybody else, really. Early on in this whole thing, people, they polled folks, they asked them questions like, would you be interested in watching sports without any fans there? And most people, by and large, were like, no, that's too weird. I don't know if I'm into that. And it's been a couple months. I think we're kind of warming up to the idea that stuff's just going to be different these days, and more people are warming to the idea that, like, yeah, if they can do it safely and I can get my, in this case, basketball fix, then why not? And then you get these little pearls of fun, unexpected consequences, like hearing everything that's said on the court.
Or why not head to the, I mean, if this coincides with the opening of, let's just say you're from Milwaukee, the opening of the sports pubs there, why not mic up a bunch of sports pubs? You know, get it so there's enough white noise so you can't hear the individual profanity that, of course, will happen whenever anyone knows that they're mic'd on national television.
It always has.
Right, it always has. But you can do something about that, maybe a slight delay, and actually use that and add that into the television feed, you know, for either side or whatever, however you want to do it, whoever you declare, because you will have to declare a home team in every game. That's standard. And so maybe you mic up the home team's bars or something like that, and you cut away to fans in those places, or even people in their houses.
Why not?
Why not get creative with it?
Yeah, I love
better
it.
Better than a laugh track, you know?
Oh, God. Canned laughter. The worst.
Yes.
Guys, what an 8 o'clock hour we have. Former mayor of Seattle, Greg Nichols, is going to come and talk about what's happening with the West Seattle Bridge. But before that, Andrew McIntosh, he writes for the Puget Sound Business Journal. We're going to talk about the big Boeing stories today. Layoffs and the restarting of 737 MAX production. It's all coming up next on Cairo Nights. Stay tuned.